advise meditation upon the transcendental activities of the Lord. Impersonal Brahman has no activities, but the personality of Godhead has many activities, and all such activities are transcendental, without any tinge of material quality. If the activities of the Supreme Brahman were material activities, then Narada would not have advised Vyasadeva to meditate upon them. And the Parabrahman is Lord Sri Krishna, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. In the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna realized the factual position of Lord Krishna, he addressed Lord Krishna in the following words. Arjuna summarized the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita by his realization of Lord Sri Krishna and thus said, "My dear personality of Godhead, you are the supreme absolute truth, the original person, in the eternal form of bliss and knowledge." And this is confirmed by Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyasadeva. And above all, your personal self has also confirmed it. When Vyasadeva fixed his mind in meditation, he did it in Bhakti Yoga trance and actually saw the Supreme Person with Maya, the illusory energy, in contraposition. As we have discussed before, the Lord's Maya or illusion is also a representation because Maya has no existence without the Lord. Darkness is not independent of light. Without light, no one can experience the contraposition of darkness. However, this Maya or illusion cannot overcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but stands apart from Him, Aparashrayam. Therefore, perfection of meditation is realization of the Personality of Godhead, along with His transcendental activities. Meditation on the impersonal Brahman is a troublesome business for the meditator, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 12.5, Klesho Dika Taras Tesham Avyakt Ta Sakta Chetasam. Magyan Timanandusya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Malitamyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kaupat Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we're getting to the end of the 9th chapter of the 2nd canto. 9th chapter is important because, as we've discussed in the last few weeks, just close that door. Okay. As we've discussed in the last few weeks, it is containing the Chatura Shloki of the Bhagavatam, which means the original four verses of the Bhagavatam described within the 9th chapter. So it's an integral chapter of the entire Bhagavatam. And the next chapter is also integral because it has the 10 subject matters of the Bhagavatam, which will be mentioned in the first verse of the 10th chapter. There are 10 subject matters. So these 10 subject matters, they must be included in any Puranic literature. For a literature to be considered a Purana, because we understand there are two divisions in the Vedic literatures, or two bodies of work, or two divisions which are there. One is Smriti, one is Shruti. Shruti means the philosophical portion of the Vedas, like the Upanishads. And the Smriti means, Smriti literally means remembrance, things which are passed on from memory. In other words, events which took place historically within the universe. So remembering these events, the sages, through Smriti, Then they pass it on. The great sages of the past were called Shruti Dhara, which means we could translate it as infallible memory. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj was also Shruti Dhara, which means they can hear something once or they can read something once and they can remember it verbatim. Whereas we are not like that. we can only remember a few shlokas. Some of us are very learned. They can memorize the whole Bhagavad Gita. I've met Vaishnavas in India, young people also, only in their 20s, who have memorized the entire Bhagavatam, 18,000 verses. There are pundits still like that. But you won't find anyone now who can just, practically, who can just remember everything that they've ever read or heard like that. But previously it was like that. There was so much fertility in the brain that they could just hear something or they could read something and then they would retain it perfectly. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was like that. Previously the Smriti means these verses, they were just passed down in an oral tradition. You would tell me, I would tell the next person would tell the next, and it would just stay perfectly. These days it does not happen. I tell you something, right? You change it, the next guy changes a little bit, and then we used to play the game at school, when we were in primary school. We called it Chinese whispers. Do they have it in India also? What do you call it? Gujarati whispers. Something. And we have Chinese whispers. So you say one thing, and it was funny because it used to happen in the class. You know, we're all kids, we're all like 8 years old, and the teacher would tell something, then you pass it to the next one. By the time it got around, it was never the same. And it was only like 20 people within the space of 3 minutes like that, but it was not the same. And I used to always change it completely. So it was completely different to what was there. So by the time you got to the end, it was never the same. So that is Kali Yuga. You just tell someone something and then it just gets modified or interpreted. Whereas the Vedic literatures, they cannot be changed. And if they become changed, they become defective. And that's the defect in the modern world with the other philosophies, the other religions. Things have become watered down or changed or perverted, or you know, the truth has become obstructed, and then you don't have the original message. And that's the defect with modern Christianity. The original teaching of Christ, which has been passed down, has been modified or lost or tampered with, and then you don't have the original teaching anymore. And therefore you don't have the purity or the potency of the original teaching. As Prabhupada taught us, purity is the force. Everything remains potent as long as you don't change things. So Prabhupada said, repeat the philosophy in your own words. So when we give a class or we're preaching to someone, we speak in our own words, right? Our realization of the philosophy. But we don't change the essential truth. Because as soon as you change the truth, it becomes modified. It becomes watered down. It loses its potency. So therefore, everything must be kept intact. So, previously, the Smriti, Smriti means the Puranic literatures. The Bhagavatam is Purana. Purana literally means old or ancient. Purana means a very ancient thing. So these are very old histories. We're hearing about events which took place at the beginning of the universe. So we're hearing about things which are, you know, millions of years old, incalculable how old some of these pastimes are. So these Puranic literatures, there are 18 major Puranas, which the Bhagavatam is part of. It is called the Bhagavat Purana. Right? And then there are 18 minor Puranas. Now, for a Purana to be classified and authorized as a Purana, it must have 10 subject matters. So the 10 subject matters will be mentioned in two verses from now, the first verse of the 10th chapter. So it's an important chapter and it's an important verse because it will give you 10 subject matters which are described within the Puranic literatures. And it can only be classified as a Purana if it contains these 10 subject matters. If the 10 subject matters are not there, it is not considered a Purana. So then we'll hear about them. We'll hear first there is Sarga, then there is Visarga. So there must be some explanation of the creation. And then there must be some explanation of the secondary creation. Right? So that must be within the Purana. Not all the Puranas will go into as much depth of each of the 10 subject matters, but there must be something there of the 10. Then it is classified as a Purana. So the Bhagavatam, it goes into great detail about Saga and Visaga. If you go to second canto, it begins to describe creation elaborately. Third canto becomes very elaborate. Actually, creation, the entire creation, is described 3 times in the third canto, over the 33 chapters, is it? 33, I think, for the 33, for the third canto. 3 times, in detail, right? It goes again, and then again, and then again. In detail, describes the Visarga, the Sarga, and the Visarga. Right? The first creation, and then the secondary creation coming from Brahma. So it must be there. No? So then one may ask, why do we need to study that? Why do we need to study creation? When I was teaching the in the Bhakti Vaibhav course, we taught the first 6 cantos, and a lot of the devotees struggled when we got to the third canto, because it was a discussion of creation, very intricate details, you know, creation from the atom, time, right? And especially some of the Madhijis, they said, can't we just skip over? Or can't we just read through? Especially when you're doing it for the third time. It's kind of elaborate. So then the Acharyas, they say, why do we need to study this? Because we need to understand the difference between matter and spirit. The very first verse of the Bhagavatam says, the Bhagavatam teaches us to see the difference between matter and spirit, or in other words, the body and the soul. Right? And that's what the creation is about. We study the creation, why? So we can understand, this is not what I am. There are 24 material elements, right? So which of those material elements are we? None. Right? We're not none of the elements. We're the 25th element. The 25th element is the Atma, or the soul. That is who we are. So we have to differentiate. That is the process of neti, neti. I am not this. I am not that. I am not earth. I am not water. I am not fire. I am not air. I am not ether, mind, intellect, ego. We have to analyze all these things. So that is why it is described analytically, so we can think about it and we can understand I am not these things. Then we have, after describing all of that, then we understand what we are. And that is the soul, the Atma. And then the 26th element is Paramatma. So to understand, that's why there is such an elaborate explanation between the two. So we're about to hear of the 10 subject matters which are there. Now, of the 10, which is the most important? There are 10 subject matters. Which is that? Someone said something. Which is the most important of the 10?
Ashraya.
Ashraya. Yeah, Ashraya is the last one. It is the summum bonum, Prabhupada translates as in Latin. So the Ashraya. Ashraya means the shelter. Just like all of us live in an ashram. Right? Some of us are brahmacharini. Some of us are brahmachari. Some of us are grihastha. And some of us are vanaprastha. Some of us are sannyas. So we all have an ashram, right? It mentions that if you are not within an ashram, or in other words, if you're not following the Vedic principles, you cause a disturbance in society. You have to be somewhere. Right? If you're not situated in a particular ashram, then it becomes disturbing for yourself and for others. So therefore, all of us have to be situated. Ashraya means sheltered. Right? Brahmachari ashram is a shelter. Brahmacharini ashram is a shelter. Right? Prabhupada actually says brahmachari life or brahmacharini life is the best life. Right? It is superior to sannyas. Right? Sannyas is it's like being in a pressure cooker. Right? Being a sannyasi. It's very intense. Right? That's why only intense devotees can enter into the ashram. It's very intense. Because you're scrutinized. Right? And Mahaprabhu says this in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says you get a white sheet right? And you put a black spot on the white sheet, everyone looks at the black spot, right? But the sheet is perfectly white, but everyone will say, oh, look, there's a little spot there. Mm-hmm. So when you're a sannyasi, everyone's doing that to you all the time, right? Oh, look, there's a little spot there. Maharaj had two rascals for lunch. Right? That's what happens, right? Just some little deviation, and then someone will immediately point it out. It happened to Mahaprabhu himself, right? Ramachandra Puri, right? Criticized Mahaprabhu, invites him for lunch, come and take prasad. So he comes for prasad, and then he feeds him, right? And then he gives him lots of sweets and lots of prasad, and then Mahaprabhu takes it out of reciprocation. And then afterwards he walks out and he says he can't control his senses. Well, what sort of a person is that? But criticizing. He has no sense control. Sannyas, but not control the senses. He will fall down. So then it got back to Mahaprabhu. When Lord Chaitanya heard he is being criticized, he said, okay, from tomorrow I only eat half as much. And very simple prasad. And then he started doing like that. And then after some time, the devotees, they became upset. Because they could not cook for him. They could not offer him what they wanted to offer him. And the devotees had been sending prasadam from Mayapur. Because the devotees used to walk from Mayapur to Puri. It took 1 month and they would all bring prasad. So Swarup Damodar had been keeping the prasad in a room. So a whole room. Imagine like the dining room or something is just full of prasad. So many devotees bring prasad, but Mahaprabhu could not take it. Because he's saying I'm being very strict. So Swarup Damodar said, there's a problem because so much prasad is coming and you're not taking because you're being so austere. So we're storing it all. But now some offense is being created because prasad is not being honored. Lord Chaitanya said, bring everything. So they brought everything. He sat there for an hour or two and ate everything that they brought into the room. Like a room full of prasad. This is like my ultimate dream. So nice. This is the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, you can do it. Not just Krishna can do it, but you can also do it. He gives you capacity. Material world, we are limited. In the spiritual world, there's no limitation. Madhu Mangala, you know Krishna's friend? Madhu Mangala, right? He's very funny. Madhu Mangala. He makes noises under his arms. It makes everyone laugh all the time. It makes Krishna laugh. They're always having sweet pastimes. So one time, the gopis, they offended Madhu Mangala because all the boys, there's one village, Varshana. Has anyone been to Varshana? And if you're doing parikram, when you go down through Sankari Kaur, there's that little pass you go down through, and then there's a village there, I think it's called Chitrakoli, like that kind of, it's the village of Chitra, who's one of the Ashtasakis, one of the eight gopis. So she has a little village there. She lives right next to Srimati Radharani. So all the boys, the cow, Krishna and the boys, they all, because they're like a, how would you say it? They're like a transcendental prasadam raiding team, like a SWAT team. So they're all moving through the village, right? And they see a window. So they all jump through the window, right, of one of the houses in the village. And they all start taking all the yogurt and sweet rice, whatever's in there, butter, they're just like, everyone's eating. So Madhu Mangala was the last one to jump in because he's a bit big. So he jumps in. So they're all eating, and then they hear the gopis coming. So all the boys jump out the window. And Madhu was the last one to jump out because he's a bit bigger. But he ate so much, he can't get out the window anymore. So the boys have got him on one side, they're pulling him, and the girls are on the other side, they're gopis, and they have one stick and they're hitting him. So he's stuck. Finally the boys pull him through, But now he's upset. Because he's a brahmana. Right? But he's very like moody, like kind of boy. He's always like that. So then he goes to the gopis and he said, you've upset me. He said, you have offended a brahmana. So I will curse you that all of you will marry old husbands with many co-wives, like this. And they will have many children, like that. So then gopis become scared. No, 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 Madhu, don't curse us, don't curse us. Like that. What can we do to pacify you? And he says, you have to give me laddus. So then they say, how many? He says, 1 million. Like that. So then that's what happens. So then if you go, there's a little kund there. It's called, it's got different names, but sometimes we call it Krishna kund. You know, you're doing the parikram, you go through the village, through Santiari Kaur, and then you go through the village and you turn around and then there's the kund, beautiful kund, before you start going back up the hill. That's one of my favorite places. Like, you know that kund? Yeah. You came for the 12-hour kirtan? Yeah, that place, like that. So you know on the other side of the kund there's a simhasan. You see there's like a seat on the far side of the kund. Looking up to Morkutia, there's a beautiful seat. So Madhu Mangala sits on that seat and the gopis feed him 1 million laddus. Right? And he eats them all. Right? In one sitting. Just sits in this. Just pops them off. Right? Everything gone. This is what it is like in the spiritual world. It is unlimited. There is unlimited potency, which is there. Does anyone remember what I was actually talking about before I... I had a point. Purity is the force. Very good. What's that got to do with what I was... What's it? Ah, cha-cha-cha-cha. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Okay. So... Then if the sannyasi, if he eats too much, right, immediately he will be criticized. But in the spiritual world, there is no limitation. Right? In the spiritual world, there is unlimited facility given by Krishna. In the material world, we have to follow varna and ashram. So you have a particular varna, you have a particular ashram. And you have to follow the rules and regulations of that varna or ashram. If you're brahmachari or brahmacharini, then you have to follow. Right? There are strict rules which are there. And they have to be there. And what are they there for? Because they are called ashraya. Ashraya means shelter. If you follow the rules of your ashrama, you become sheltered, you become nurtured, and by that tapasya, by that austerity, you advance in Krishna consciousness. You purify your consciousness. So what are the two most important things for the brahmachari and the brahmacharini? What are the elements which are necessary for that ashram? There are many elements, but what are some of the important elements for that ashram? Sadhana, yeah, in general, yeah. Swajaya, yeah. You could say like that. Yeah, Prabhupada says that brahmachari, they must study. Right? That is what the ashram is for. Right? It is an opportunity which is given to you. You have time in that ashram, believe me. Because when you go into the next ashram, the grihastha ashram, time is difficult, right? Especially when you have kids. Right? When you have kids, that's it. That's your life. That is your sadhana practically, right? That is your service, right? You don't have the opportunity, right? So, brahmachari or brahmacharini ashram, it is the greatest opportunity because you don't have any other responsibility practically, right? Just serve Krishna, and that extra time you have is meant to study Prabhupada's books. Right? And you have to take advantage of it. Because if you do get married, if you do change ashram, it's a it's a different ball game. Right? It's much more difficult to find that time. So you have to take advantage of that time. Right? And what's one of the other elements which is extremely important? Brahmachari, brahmacharini.
Sense control.
Very good, yeah. Sense control. In other words, it is celibacy. Right? It is not associating with the opposite sex. Right? That is a blessing. That you do not have to associate with the opposite sex. Because Prabhupada says man is good, woman is good, but together they are bad. Which means as soon as you put a man and a woman together, right, it becomes complicated. Why? Because it is the material energy. Right? It is complicated. Especially if the man and woman have false ego. Right? Which is generally most of us. Right? If you don't have false ego, it's not such a complicated thing. If the man and woman are Krishna conscious and they understand Atma Tattva, they understand their spiritual position and they relate to each other in the mood of devotee, right? I am devotee, you are devotee, then it becomes harmonious. If Krishna is in the center in the relationship, it becomes harmonious. But if it is not, then it becomes complicated. Right? And then male-female relationships, they just become a distraction. So therefore, the whole purpose of being a brahmachari or brahmacharini is to
practice.
Yes, sense control, or not associating with the opposite sex. Right? And it is a great blessing, because it means you can, without distraction, you can just focus on Krishna. And then if you feel the desire is there, that I need to get married, I need to associate with the opposite sex, then Krishna gives you a license. These days, they give you a license to drive a car. But they don't give you really a license for too many other things. But there should be a license within society. Marriage is a license. It means responsibility. Right? When you get married, a grihastha ashram, it's an ashraya, it's an ashram, it's a shelter. It's a place where you can advance in Krishna consciousness. You can make just as much advancement in grihastha ashram as you can in brahmachari ashram or sannyasa ashram. Right? Because it's an ashram, it's a shelter. Right? And if you're surrendering to Krishna properly, you will advance in Krishna consciousness. But you have to follow the rules. There's a license. There's parameters. Just like if you get a driver's license, a car license, there's parameters. You can't just drive wherever you want. Right? Unless you're in India. Then. But there's a parameter. Right? Yeah, you have to follow. Right? You can't just go there or go there. You have to follow. There's rules and regulations. A grihastha ashram is like that. Right? Okay, you can enjoy the senses to a degree, but there are parameters there. And if you step outside of that, right, it becomes distracting for your Krishna consciousness because you become implicated in the material energy. And what is the material energy like? Anyone have experience? What is the material energy like for you? Now, what's it like being in this material world? Miserable. Very good. You're going to be very popular after class. Miserable like that. The material energy is like a spider's web. That's what it's described like in the Bhagavatam. Right? This is what the material world is like. It's a spider's web. Right? If you're a spider, no problem. Right? The web doesn't mean anything. You just cross it. But if you're not a spider and you touch that web, right, you're implicated. Right? And the more you struggle, the more it becomes difficult. Right? So that is what the material world is like. King Kulashekhar, he gives a very graphic description about what this material world is like. King Kulashekhar says, the material world is like an ocean. It's like being in the ocean. Prabhupada would say that when you leave ISKCON, what happens when you leave ISKCON? What is it called? We bloop. That came from Prabhupada. Right, because when you jump off the boat of ISKCON, just like ISKCON's a big boat, we're all on the boat. And who's the captain? That's Prabhupada, right? So we're all on the boat. So the most important thing is don't get off the boat. Right? Only crazy people get off the boat. Right? And people do it. We see devotees, they get off the boat. So they jump into the ocean. They think, I'll be more happy there. Right? So they jump into the ocean. They think, I'll make a big splash. I'm back. Right? I'm back in the material world. Big splat. But Prabhupada said you go bloop. Right? You just jump off the boat and you just go bloop. Right? And then suddenly you're in the ocean. Now what's the ocean like? You go from Melbourne, just go down here, there's a boat called Spirit of Tasmania. Every day goes across to Tasmania. Right? So I've been on the boat a couple of times. You get out in the middle, right, and you can see nothing but water. And that's some of the most turbulent water on the planet. The Bass Strait is very turbulent. Even a few times they've turned the boat back because it's just too turbulent. So you're in there, you see only water and you jump off. Then suddenly you're in an ocean. And then it means getting back to land, what a struggle. What a struggle. That's what it's like when we're in the material world. It's a struggle. Right? So Kulashekhar says, okay, it's a struggle. And he says there are waves. And he says the waves are the three modes of nature, right, which are just overpowering us. And he says the really strong wind, that is sex desire. Right? If someone becomes overcome by sex desire, right, it's like the waves started getting really just smashing you. Right? And then he says underneath the water, you're already struggling enough. And then underneath the water come the makara. The sharks and the crocodiles, they come in and start biting you. He says, that's your family members.
Right? So you're already like being smashed around by your own sex desire and your own and then your family come under and they start grabbing you. And then he says, and if that's not enough, then suddenly there's a whirlpool. And the whirlpool starts sucking you in. And he said, that is the wife. Right? Or you could say for the women, it means the husband. Right? And then just starts taking you. Right? So that's the material world. That's King Kula Shekhar's instruction to us. It is a place of suffering. So this is this material energy. It is like that. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us. I've missed the point again. I'm sorry. I am really tired at this point in my life. So I am sorry. What's that? Very good. Thank you so much. So Brahmachari Ashram is, and Brahmachari Ashram, they are uncomplicated comparatively. And Grihastha Ashram, it is a shelter, but then you're dealing with the material energy intimately, which means the material energy will hit you with everything it has. So it is a place of shelter, but you have to keep Krishna in the center. And you see, if you look back at the acharyas, many of the acharyas are grihasthas. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Prabhupada himself. Right? Grihastha ashram is not a impediment to spiritual advancement. It can actually be the other way. You know, some of the most advanced devotees are grihasthas. The Panchatattva were grihasthas. Right? Then they took sannyas, but they were grihasthas. Right? Our disciplic succession, many grihasthas like that. So it's a grihastha, it's not an impediment to spiritual life, but you have to live it properly. You have to take shelter. You have to follow the instructions, and then you can advance and go back to Krishna. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us about ashraya, the ultimate shelter. That is the final subject matter. That is the most important subject matter. And Prabhupada calls the 10th canto, he calls it ashraya. Ashraya means shelter. So where is our shelter? Because we have ashraya in this world. We have grihastha ashram, we have brahmachari ashram, we might become sannyasis, vanaprastas, like that. So you have shelter, but it's not the ultimate shelter. It's not the param satyam di mihi. It is not the ultimate shelter. What is the ultimate shelter? Right. That is the 10th canto. Right. That is a blue cowherd boy. Right. He is the ultimate shelter. He is the only person who can give us complete shelter. Right. So it is very important to take shelter of him. That's what the entire philosophy is about. What does he say at the end of the Gita? Just surrender to me. And then he said, before that he says, Mamana bhava mad bhakto, madhyaji mam namaskuru, mame vaishasi satyam te. Satya, what does satya mean?
Truth.
Krishna says, I tell you truthfully, honestly I'm telling you, trust me. He's saying, trust me. We have to learn to trust Krishna. Now, what is one of the greatest problems in this material world? Right? If we go back to the first canto, when Vyas, he looks, because Prabhupada mentions that in this purport, Vyas is instructed by Narada, right? Write the Bhagavatam. Right? So he goes into meditation. So in the 7th chapter of the first canto, the very opening verses, you hear about how he meditates. And he has a darshan of Kali Yuga, because Kali Yuga is about to begin. And how does he define Kali Yuga? What is the quality which he explains Kali Yuga to be like? He says, Ashraddha. Ashraddha means people don't have faith. Right? That is what is destroyed by the nature of this age. Faith is destroyed. Right? So what happens is we lose faith in other people. Right? I can't trust people. And it's a big problem, actually. Psychologically, in Kali Yuga, it becomes a big problem. I can't trust you. Right? And people become like that because of the nature of the age. It destroys our psychological inner fibers. And then what is the problem with that? Then it's hard for us to trust Krishna. Because we think, is Krishna really going to be there for us? And what is the answer? Yes, he is going to be there for us. But we have to develop that. And you have to look deep within your heart. Right? And over years and years in devotional service, you'll see this will become an issue for you. And I've heard our gurus, advanced devotees now, our gurus, I've heard them openly say, And they're well beyond us in terms of years and practice and sadhana and advancement. They've said it's something which you have to face very deeply within your heart. Is Krishna actually really going to be there for me? It's something we all have to face. Because he is going to be there. He is there already. He's waiting for us. He's with us right now as Paramatma. He's the closest person to us all day, all the time, forever and ever and ever. He's with us all the time. But we lose that faith that Krishna is there. So Ashraya means shelter. He is my shelter. Right? And we have to learn to love him. We have to learn to trust him. Because Prabhupada said, the very early days of ISKCON, if you look at the late 60s, if you read the letters in the late 60s that Prabhupada was writing to the disciples, he repeats this sentence again and again and again. It's like a theme. Prabhupada says this movement will go on from love and trust. Right? And that's what life goes on with. And that's what the spiritual world is based upon. Right? It's based on love. It's based on trust. Krishna knows every morning Mother Yashoda is going to be there. Right? He knows. Right? Because her love is so intense. Right? And that's what the spiritual world is based upon. And that's how Prabhupada said, ISKCON will only go on if internally there is love and trust. Right? If there's real affection between all of us. Real affection. Right? Are we going to be there for each other? Through thick, through thin. Right? And can we actually trust each other? Do we know that we're going to be there for each other? Sometimes I remember in the past, you know, as a brahmachari or a brahmacharini, you'd get sick. Right? And it was like you were a corpse in the ashram. You're laying there practically half dead. Right? For 3 days, people just walk around you. You're okay?
No, I'm actually dying.
Okay. Now, do you want some water or something? You know, and sometimes it's like that. Sometimes we become impersonal the way we deal with devotees. It's not Maya to look after the physical body of the devotee. There's one letter from the past. I think it's from Srinivas Acharya. I can't remember. It's one of the great Acharyas. I think it's Srinivas. So after the six Goswamis, then there was Srinivas, Narottama, and Shyamananda Prabhu. So there's one letter, I think it's Srinivas, he writes to the others, like they're on the other side of India at that time, I think he's in Vrindavan, they're in Bengal or something. And he writes, and these are liberated souls, I mean they all understand their eternal relationship with Radha and Krishna. But he writes and he's saying, how are you? Are you well? Is the family well? Is your wife okay? Like that. It wasn't like he's speaking, you know, he writes them, you know, what was it like in the Rasa Leela last night and... You know, he's like not going into it, but he's involved in this world, right? Caring for each other. And that's how our movement began. Who started this movement? Right, it was Prabhupada. He started this guy, right? And he loved and he trusted the devotees, right? Prabhupada, 1977, a couple of days before he left this world, and he's emaciated. I was watching some footage the other day. Like, Prabhupada was emaciated in the final 6 months, but those final days, his body was... finished. It was weak, right? It was just, you know, it was, you know. And then Prabhupada, Brahmananda Prabhu was leading kirtan, very slowly. Prabhupada said there had to be 24-hour kirtan, right? Well, in the final days, because Prabhupada was preparing to leave. And then Prabhupada woke up, and he heard in the corner, there's this one devotee just playing cartels, very softly just chanting the Maha Mantra. Prabhupada said, who is that? And then they said, Brahmananda. And then Prabhupada said, Brahmananda. Because Brahmananda had been a little bit sick. Prabhupada said, Brahmananda, are you okay? Mm-hmm. Right? This is Prabhupada. Right? And Prabhupada's nearly dead. Right? He said, Brahmana, are you okay? Like that. Love and trust. Right? That's what our movement is about. Right? And without love and trust, right, the movement does not go on. And that is what Ashraya means. Right? It means shelter. Right? Krishna will look after us. We just have to surrender to him. We have to learn to trust him. And it's hard in Kali Yuga to trust. It's hard in Kali Yuga to trust. But we have to learn to trust Krishna. And he will look after us. And you see, the more you surrender to him, he looks after you every time. Just like, did you read the other day, Jayapataka Swami was in a car accident? Right, the other day. Maharaj, he's okay, but Maharaj was in a car accident in India, right? And then the car accident happened. Was it Africa, was it? Okay. So the other day Maharaj was in a car accident in Africa, and then the car spun off the road and didn't flip, but it span and then crashed into the gutter and everything. And then, you know, people ran over, and but everyone in the car was okay, including Maharaj. Right? Everything was protected. And then 1 minute later, a tow truck drives past, right, and stops, like as if it was ordered. You know, someone ordered the tow truck. Just drives it, stops, and then everyone gets out of the car. You know, another car comes, they all leave. Just picks up the car and takes it like that. Krishna looks after the devotees. He protects us. When we are surrendered to him 100%, he looks after us. He's there for us. He loves us, right? And if we can learn to trust him, he's the most trustworthy person. So this is what Ashraya means. And this is what the 10th canto is about. That's why we're studying all these cantos, because when we get to the 10th canto, we have to understand, this is my shelter. And that's a very deep subject matter. To really, deep, deep, deep within your heart, take shelter of Krishna. And you have to see throughout your life, because we're all tested every day, right? All of us are being tested. Right? If I look around, I know most of you very well, right? So if I look around, I know all of your tests. Not all of them, but I know many of your tests, right? And everyone's going through something, including myself, right? We're all going. But then all these things are a test. Where are they coming from? Krishna. And why is he doing it? Because he's seeing, are you going to go to me or are you going to go back to Maya? Is it me who you're going to take shelter of, or are you going to take shelter of the material energy again, like you've done for so many lifetimes? Or is this the lifetime where you break the cycle, right, and you take shelter of me finally, and you go back to me? Pratijane, priyosime, I will take you back. Satyam, I tell you truthfully, because you are dear to me. So Krishna will take us back. But we have to be really ready to go back. So that's what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. So we'll stop here, see if there are any questions or comments about what we've discussed. No, but when Krishna says in the Gita, declare it boldly, Arjuna. My devotee will never perish. But he never says anything about the material body. He just spent the whole second chapter, right, the first part of the second chapter, telling you you're not the body. There's nowhere in the Gita where Krishna says, I will protect your material body. That's up to him. If he wants to protect it, he will. But if he doesn't want to, then... So if he wants to take you... Then we say, oh, the devotee died. That's bad. No, that's good. Because now the devotee is back with Krishna. Or if Krishna gives you, you know, you have an accident, then like Bhakti Raghava Maharaj, right, one of our ISKCON sannyasis, you know, he lost his... Mayapur used to get attacked in the 70s by the dacoits. So they threw a Molotov cocktail, like an explosion, and it hit and blew Maharaj's leg off. And Maharaj has only got up to the knee. Right? One of our gurus in ISKCON. Like that. So Maharaj could have left ISKCON. Right? I joined this movement. Prabhupada sent me to India. I got my leg blown off. What sort of a movement is this? I'll go back to America. You know, like Maharaj stayed in ISKCON. That was Krishna's arrangement. So everything that happens to us, good or bad, there's no good or bad. For a devotee, it's only good. Because it's Krishna's arrangement. But we have to learn to see it like that. It's easy to say it when you're giving class. Yeah, it's all... I remember one day I was giving class. This is like 1996, I was a brahmachari. I was giving class and I'm saying, you've just got to surrender to Krishna. You know, everything, you know, just give your life to... And I'm getting a big class, you know. And everyone's like, yeah. So then I get out on book distribution, right? And I said, I think I was even saying, literally, in the class that morning, I was saying, even if your life is threatened, right, you have to, so I'm out in book distribution, right, and then I'm on the corner of Flinders and Elizabeth, you know, it was like that corner, around the corner. There wasn't many shops there at that time because the city was a bit dark. So I'm selling books, and people are walking down and saying, you know, are you from Melbourne or from out of town? And then, so this guy comes, right? I said, are you from Melbourne or from out of town? And he just stops, and he comes up right close to my face. And he said, I'll kill you. Right? And he was serious. You know, it was some, like, gangster guy or something. You know, he's serious. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm just thinking, right? And then in my mind, you know, I'm giving this whole lecture in the morning, you know, just surrender to Krishna, even if your life is on the line. And I'm just thinking, my God, you know, like, what's going to happen now, you know? So anyway, I get out of it. Somehow I, you know, got out of it, and, you know, and then he took off, and I was going. So then I hit up the next guy, and the next guy was about 7 foot tall, literally. Like, I'm not joking, he was massive. And then I said to him, you from Melbourne or from out of town? And, you know, my heart's still beating from the last guy. You know, and I said, you from Melbourne or from out of town? And he looked at me and he goes, what are you doing? You know, this guy's massive. You know, what are you doing? Right? And he goes, get off the street. What are you doing? You know, what is this? Like that. And, you know, I had to run into one of the shops. You know? And I ran to the shop, and he followed me in, and I said to him, I said, give me the phone, I want to ring the police. There weren't mobile phones back then. I said, give me the phone, I want to ring the police. Like, this guy was, like, threatening me, you know, and then everyone in the shop's going, what's going on? And then the guy walks out, but, I mean, this is, so it's easy to say everything. Yeah. It's easy to sit on the Vyasasana and say, oh, I just surrendered to Krishna, he's your only shelter, like that, but, you know, let's get real. You know, are we actually surrendered to Krishna? All right. It's a big mission. It's a mission. Right? It's what our life is about. Right? It's something going on in here. Like Maharaj gave class last week, Veda Vyasa Priya Maharaj, you know, my Shiksha Guru, so powerful, you know. And he said, you know, I've heard it many times before, and I say it a lot in my classes, Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaking about pratishta. But then when I really began to analyze it, I said, yes, this is actually my problem in this material world. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur says all the other anattas are only coming from that one point. You know, I've been meditating on it a lot in the last week. There's so much work and purification. You know, we say, oh yeah, we're good devotees and we surrender to Krishna, but, you know, there's a lot more that needs to be done to actually give ourselves fully to Krishna. Bhagavatam says, ahoituki apratihata. Ahoituki means unmotivated. A lot of the times I think, oh yeah, I'm unmotivated, I'm just doing this for Krishna. But when I really get in there, it's not, you know, it's not really. It's very much about me, this whole thing I'm doing. You know, and my guru said to me the day he initiated me, right, he said, because I was an actor before I became a devotee, and Aniruddha said he's an actor, right? And my guru Maharaj looked at me and he said, just keep playing the same role. Which means we're acting. And it's pretentious. You know, it's not, we're surrendering to Krishna, but there's still so much in there that we're not really giving to Krishna. So is that okay? Okay. Any other question? Yeah.
Yeah, you're talking about how it's like in say throughout the movement, it's really hard for people to trust people. So ultimately hard to trust Krishna. So then how do we like open ourselves up to people we trust?
Other devotees? Yeah, because if we can trust the devotees, then we will trust Krishna. So we have to find devotees that we can trust.
And,
yeah, well, the guru is a Shraya Vigraha, which means Krishna sends the guru. Yeah, he sent Prabhupada. Prabhupada is infallible because Prabhupada is the same as Krishna. He's infallible. So we have the same trust that we have for Krishna as we do for Prabhupada, right? And then Prabhupada sends his representatives, right? And then there's so many devotees in our movement and so many devotees in this room who I really love and trust. It has to be real. If it doesn't get real amongst the devotees, it doesn't get real with Krishna. Because that's called Kanishta. Kanishta means, oh, I love Krishna and everything, but not the devotees. Or devotees used to say to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I can surrender to you, I can work with you, but I can't work with the others. Prabhupada said, love me, love my dog. Right? So it means we have to learn to love and respect the devotees. Relationships have to become real. So if you do that, then Krishna opens up as well. It's not the same. It's not for everyone the same. Like some devotees just naturally have that childlike innocence from their previous lives. Some of us are very complicated, some of us are already very simple. And you see, like His Holiness Satchinandan Swami, He's like a child. Just so simple, so sweet. He's already like that, because He's already advanced. So we also have to become like that. So some of us have to work harder, some of us... But, you know, we just have to form like a bond between all of us. Is that okay? Okay. Any other question? Come on. Yeah, Varna is generic in Kali Yuga. It's not really clear-cut in Kali Yuga. You know, you don't see real Brahmana, you don't see real Kshatriya, you don't see real Vaishya, you don't see real Sudra. And then, like, you know, I'm kind of like a mixed Varna. I'm like kind of Brahminical, but I'm also Kshatriya. I have like two, like, kind of parts of my personality. I like to manage, administrate, control. I like to do that. I'm also Brahminical like that. So it's kind of like mixed. So I can't really say I'm Brahmana or I'm Kshatriya like that. It's not clear like that. And then, you know, I live on a farm. So most of the time I'm a Shudra. You know, because I'm just cleaning the toilets and everything else. And then, you know, half some of the time I'm a Vaishya. So what does it mean in Kali Yuga? You know, Kali Yuga is not really designed for proper Varna. I mean, you can have it to some degree, but it's not really as it was previously. So the main principle is that we are devotees. So we just serve Krishna. Do whatever is necessary. The toilet needs to be cleaned, clean it. Right? The vegetables need to be picked, pick them. Right? We need to organize the project, organize it. Right? You need to give the lecture, give it. Right? So that's it. We're devotees. We just do whatever is necessary for Krishna. It means we have a particular nature. So we need to be in our nature. Like if you have the controlling, if you're good at organizing, you need to be doing that. Otherwise, you won't feel satisfied. So you need to be situated according to your nature, but also you have to be prepared to do whatever is necessary for Krishna. So it has to be like a balance. So that's why we can't say, you know, this devotee is... And sometimes you start hearing the devotee saying this, I'm Brahmana, I'm this, I'm that, but what does that mean? It means I won't clean the toilet, I'm a Brahmana. No, what does that mean? Be practical. Is it okay? Okay. Any other question? Comment?
In this verse, Prabhupada has given a nice verse. Narayana is describing our Vyasadeva. You want to tell us something about Vyasadeva? In the nice verse in this purport? Narayana is saying how high my disciple is.
Yeah, well, he was confused. He was confused. And then Narada said to him, now you need to write the final book. So then he got the instruction to write the final book. And then if you read the chapter 4, 5 and 6, it describes that whole pastime in the first canto. And then the beginning of the 7th chapter describes his divine vision, how he became perfect and what he saw and all those things. I can't really go into details because it takes too long. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there are sampradayic devotees and non-sampradayic devotees. So there's devotees, there's only four sampradayas coming from the beginning of the universe. So we're in the Brahma sampradaya, Brahma Madhva, then there's Ramanuj, the Sri sampradaya, then there's the Nimbaka, and then there's the Vishnu Swami. There's the four sampradayas. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says... Sorry, my brain's not working fast. Yeah, I remember what I'm talking about. It's like from here to here, it's like I can't connect properly. So it means that Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes there are four sampradayas, and the devotees within those four, they're called sampradayic devotees. But then he says there are devotees who are outside of sampradaya. which means Christianity, Islam. They're devotees of God, but they're not coming in the original four sampradayas. So what happens to them is that if they practice sincerely, right, Christianity or Islam or whatever they're practicing, in the next birth, they'll take birth, because Krishna says in Gita, I am directing the wanderings of the living entities. So in the next birth, they'll take birth in the sampradayas. Because unless you're in the sampradaya, you can't go back to Godhead. Prabhupada said the highest the Christians can go is swarga. That's as far as they can get. You know, they talk about heaven all the time. That's as far as they can go. They can't transcend. Because you're not connected properly. But in the next life, you'll take birth. If you're really sincere, you want to know God, then you'll take birth in the sampradaya, and then you'll... Yeah, I mean, without Jesus and without Muhammad, the world would be catastrophic. You know, they've gone into the darkest place, the Middle East. ISKCON can't even get into the Middle East. Everything there is underground. Your life's on the line, right? The place is, what's the word? It's volatile. It always has been. Right? There's always a war going on there. It's never peaceful. Right? There's always this whole mood. So Muhammad and Jesus had to go into there, into the Middle East, and lift everyone up. So that's what they did. Right? But by lifting everyone up, those people who follow Jesus and Muhammad, then they will, the next birth, they will take birth, and then they will enter a sampradaya, and then they will begin to practice. But they can't go back to Godhead from that situation. Does that answer? Like that? I could say more, but... Any other question, comment? Okay, Srila Prabhupada Ki.